This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of life, the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown.
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 Well, look at that. Everyone on YouTube's here. Hello. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the party. We are multiple stories deep. We've just gone through all of the news. A big filing today on behalf of Janelle Grant. A Substack post by Ryan Nemeth. Some ratings notes. Gail Kim speaking out. Her first words since her release from TNA. Lots of stuff being covered. And where is Waiting shopping for groceries? All that and more. This is why you go XL and you join us every single week after SmackDown.
Which ketchup am I using from this point forward?
Yeah, we don't give that information out for free. Okay, that's behind a paywall. So we do hope you go XL, and we're going to be telling you why to go XL this coming Monday, because we're going to be going through some of the highlights that we have coming up in April. There are no April Fools at postwrestling.com, but on Monday, I'm also going to be rolling out some of our big WrestleMania 41 coverage, and Wei Ting is going to be sitting back, because joining me on Monday night for a couple minutes, John Cena will be joining me with Wei, and we'll go over what we have planned for WrestleMania week. So I thought Cena should jump on with us for a couple minutes on Monday.
I look forward to it.
Okay, we're planning to just put John Cena into a nice reclining chair, and we're just going to like handcuff him to a desk with a laptop from Thursday till Monday.
He's trapped. Yeah, we're
we'll let him type. We'll give him some you know, wrist room and a porta potty. That's how WrestleMania week is going to be going for most of us. Wonderful visual there. Moving on.
You got to say it now.
I was going to say you might be dealing with getting peed on that week too. But boy, does that require some context. I'm sorry. I was going to just move on from it, but you forced me. If you know.
People know by now.
The Ting household is growing.
Yes, I will be away. I guess for people who might be on the free side of things who aren't aware, I will be on paternity leave
the greatest timing of Wei Ting's career.
Really the most inopportune time to have a child, and that is the week before WrestleMania. So I'm about to have a WrestleMania moment all by myself and not with the actual podcast. So
see, I blame WWE for this, because they took their sweet time. Remember like last year at WrestleMania in Philadelphia, they didn't have the announcement ready. And then we find out WrestleMania has been pushed way back till mid-April. Like this would have been like the European tour time. Like typically, like this would be WrestleMania week in most years, but they messed everything up, and they totally messed up your family planning.
I blame TKO. I blame Nikon. I blame Mark Shapiro most of all.
Yeah. This is Mark Shapiro. It's all his fault. Beyond that, do want to make mention that a couple shows and features dropping over at postwrestling.com that I want to shine a spotlight on. I've released an article on the life of Lawrence Fall, a.k.a. Lex Luger. I didn't want to go with a pun for the title, given that it's a kind of serious subject matter, but the rise and fall of Lex did come to mind, but I was just like, no, I can't.
I didn't know that was his last name, honestly.
No?
Like, I never knew his real name, I guess.
I mean, it's a name that really does not, like, even in, like, sometimes you get, like, real names that pop up on TV every now and then. But, yeah, he's been Lex Luger from day one, so.
Fall. P-F-O-L. Silent P. A rarity.
Could you imagine the wrestling spelling bee and how many people would screw that one up?
Yeah, I would, definitely. Great job on the piece, John. Audio and written version.
We do it all. So that is up for people to check out. Today, we have not only a review of the new Lunatic documentary that is premiering this weekend at the Canadian Film Fest, I think is what it is. It's happening in Toronto. And Kate from Montreal and Karen Peterson are now our resident film reviewers. They had a chance to watch the documentary, and they have a review up on the Post Wrestling Cafe. And a free release is Karen's interview with the director, Kate Kroll. And that is up now for everyone to check out. Karen and Kate did a fantastic job with this, and it's a really interesting interview as well. If you even if you have not seen the documentary, I think you'll get a lot out of the process that Kate went through to direct this film on the late Luna Vachon.
Yeah. I always thought I really respect their opinions about professional wrestling, but the two of them talking about film with like the level of depth and insight, or at least like interest as well in the types of topics that these films, bring up is a real treat. So we really lucked out with having two very, like, the best people we probably could have talking about these.
And Slop.
That's right. The latest edition of the wellness policy. Yeah, we've seen sort of an interesting evolution of the wellness policy, where when we started the show, like at this point years ago with me and Jordan, we went in with, I think, a lot of planning, like so much planning that we were intending on reading a book per month. And boy,
what a lame idea for a show.
Yeah, well, I'll leave the book reading to you and Neil, who do a much better job of it. But yeah, since then we've now kind of moved into a much more free-flowing sort of format, where we don't even go in with any sort of topic. It's just kind of me, Jordan, Neil talking and welcoming our callers in. So we had a lot of that, a wide ranging of discussions, and is always very interesting. And you'll figure out, I guess, that why we called it Slop as you listen.
Yes, it was a subtle nod to the Godwins, who are wrestling on SummerSlam 1997, which Wei and I will review next week, and you can get your fill of the slop drop. But all of that can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com to support your favorite wrestling website, and postwrestling.com for those that don't want to make the full commitment, but they want to be in the friend zone at Post Wrestling. All are welcome. Yeah, we'll take you all. Just make sure you hit a like on this video. So yeah, Monday, we will do Monday's Rewind to Raw at 9 Eastern. And then after Monday, when they're back to the States, back to our normal time, where we will be on live right after all of the shows. So that's happening on Monday, and we'll go through the cafe schedule for April. Tonight, we are going to the O2 Arena, night one of two in London, England. Last number from WrestleTix, brace yourself, 15,746. I'm sure they scaled tickets to a super affordable rate so that so many Londoners who never get to see WWE television had the opportunity to go to the O2 Arena. I'm sure they were very kind so that the barrier for entry was at a manageable level.
Yeah, maybe they'll come back next time and people who went to the show will think, wow, what a deal we got. You know, we only paid, £500 for these tickets. Like, I think these rates are only going to go up. I mean, I paid a lot of money for my groceries, you know? Like, I could only imagine if I decided to spend that money on wrestling tickets instead.
Let's assume they replicate this on Monday, okay? So roughly 30,000 tickets for WWE at the O2 Arena at God knows how high prices. Mm-hmm. On top of that, UFC just did their fight night at the O2 Arena last Saturday and did a $4.7 million gate. So think of what the haul over 9 nights would be for TKO in London, no less. Yeah. And all sellouts. I mean, we're talking like 45,000 tickets sold at exorbitant rates.
Yeah, with that sort of demand, I mean, I imagine they're already considering it, but I feel like a reason to celebrate if you're one of the people paying, because I feel like it does probably send a message to the company that they are worthy of hosting a WrestleMania level event, if you know, not WrestleMania itself, I won perhaps. So yeah,
Cody starts the show and he gets into the ring, and there were Let's Go Cena sucks chants, and once again a staple of the European tour, he just rode out the chants, wrote out the singing, and this just went on and on. He mentioned Cena.
Yeah, at this point, they're not going to turn the crowd. They're not going to be able to stop the crowd from chanting for Cena. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, much in the same way it wasn't necessarily a bad thing when Cena was, you know, sort of embracing them. But in contrast to what, like the way Cena, you know, was chanted against, Cody in all of this doesn't feel like he's getting sort of swallowed by it. Like, he feels still like an equal to John Cena, in my opinion.
What, given that, you know, these TVs are European markets and whatever it is when they go back to the States, had they not done the turn with Cena and instead he's just the legend from the past and this is your generational battle between the last generation star, this generation star, do you feel the crowd would be going against Cody? Do you feel these reactions would be similar? And do you think that that would have been a tougher road for Cody? Or would you think like the audience might be similar in the sense where it'd be dueling chants for a lot of these?
I feel like it would be somewhat similar, John, because I think even if it wasn't a Cena heel turn, they would have found some sort of way to drive up, you know, the animosity between the two. And if anything, I think being a heel has made Cena cooler, and therefore you're giving him a bigger babyface reaction for that reason, even more than I think the sort of want of a crowd to want to see him just break Ric Flair's record as a babyface.
So he mentioned Cena going for his 17th title win, and he's going to see Cena on Monday. And there were like boos, but he's like in this same building in this city, just spend another $400 to see us on Monday. Wait a minute. That's Monday. Do we get to stay here until then? He does not get to go on because God knows. Thank God he was interrupted, because I don't know what more Cody could have said here. He's said his piece about Cena. I don't think he has any fresh material here.
Well, they still got like 3 weeks.
We've still got the Rock chapter, but God knows that he is.
Wow, you're right. Another week without mention of Dwayne.
You don't even think of Dwayne at this point. Hmm. Randy comes out. Another major reception for him. Crowd is singing his theme, and he recalls seeing Cody in his early 20s, frustrated. And he had to leave WWE to grow, and that took a lot of balls, and says that you changed the business single-handedly. Cody Rhodes, who got all of his money together to launch a company built around himself, single-handedly changed the business.
Yeah. I'm sure you can read in some very subtle shade in there against all the other parties involved. Now, okay, if you're to maybe argue for that statement, can you say that he was the primary driving force behind all in? Can you say that?
I think he was an important piece. I can't say he was the singular reason for
Dave
the success
Meltzer really
of all
was a singular driving force behind all in.
I guess so.
If we want to read that deep into it. Yeah, no, you can't. No, especially with AEW, like, I don't think you could even say single-handedly with anybody, but if you could
listen,
say that about
this
anybody,
guy was a core ingredient in all of this. He was not just some hanger-on or something in like of the group that helped launch this. I mean, if he had just said you helped change the business, that's not hyperbole at this point. It's
and he could have.
He could have, but no, I mean, this is very intentional. I mean,
yeah.
When you just watch like the Sean Spears promo on NXT and even like Punk bringing in the I Still Work With Children, like there's definitely like a fixation on just getting these in there. And I really don't know how much these really land with their audience, to be quite honest, because like Punk has had several whiffs of these dropping these references that none of the audience responds to.
This could have cost Lex Luger his Sting introduction. This line. Imagine that.
That could be Tony. Why don't you have the guy who single-handedly changed the business in Duplex? That could be it. Yes. So he goes on to mention Cody's match with Rollins at Hell in a Cell with the torn pec, beating Reigns for the title, but there's always another story. And he mentions business being up. 99.9% of that is because of you, Cody. That business is up. And I love you, Cody.
Can we get Brandon Thurston to fact check that percentage?
He said, I'm very proud of you, but it's now time for WrestleMania. And there is going to be a time when After Cena tries to go for 17, I'm going to go for number 15. But I'm not going to kick you in the balls like a coward. I'm going to look you in the eye and tell you that I'm coming for your belt. And then Drew McIntyre came out for his portion of the promo. Total babyface to this audience. And I mean, there was no even fighting this. He's been consistently over in every market they've gone to on these TVs overseas. And he remarks, two Nepo babies having a love fest. That makes me sick. And he asks, what in God's name justifies Randy Orton getting a title shot? Man is not wrong. As he says, since returning, you've done nothing. The crowd is chanting for Punk. He says, you all should have listened to my warnings about John Cena the night before Elimination Chamber. And then mentions that guyliner wearing Timu Undertaker, Damian Priest. And says, Randy, you look totally jacked on the outside, but on the inside, your back is hanging by a thread, and he threatens to break it. And that's enough for Cody to go down to his back, strikes Drew, and then Drew avoids the RKO, sliding out of the ring. And after the break, they announce Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton tonight. I'm not going to say that this was this planted a long-term seed with Randy that they had been teasing before he went out with the injury angle with Kevin Owens. This also set up your TV main event. Did this need to be 24 minutes? I that's a tougher defense here, but I mean, that's what happens on a 3-hour show.
A lot of it was taken up by this crowd and their singing. You know, this was definitely, if you're into singing crowds, this was definitely,
this crowd, they wanted to sing and they sang a lot on this show.
Yeah. I mean, again, they're making specific focus to feature all of these crowds, and they're very aware that, you know, these receptions are very special, and I think like it's part of the Paul Levesque Lee Fitting playbook to put a spotlight on that and to emphasize that. Sometimes maybe that could be stretched out a little too much, but I personally didn't mind it, especially like with the ability to skip through a lot of the entrances. So I thought this segment actually had the feeling of like a high star power type of opening that is usually reserved for Raw. SmackDown, I feel more often than not, is kind of missing this sort of like big, you know, top act type of like talking segment.
And they bookended the show with the big stars.
Yeah. So, I mean, I personally liked it. I thought it was another glimpse as to like how over as a babyface Drew McIntyre can be. It's not like he's really changing up his shtick a whole lot. He's just so entertaining with his cracks. Timu Undertaker is like, you can't not laugh at that. That's like rock level type of like great humor, right? So there's a babyface act in him whenever they want to get to it. I also thought it was notable that Orton kind of threw a little bit of shade towards John Cena, saying that he's not going to need to kick Cody in the balls in order to get his title challenge. And that just kind of made me think, could they be going to Orton and Cena at some point? And
I think that's a guarantee this year of one of his matches. Yeah.
And if they do, you know, that's a pairing that I don't know if I would have been that interested in seeing with Cena as a babyface, because I feel like we've seen it so much. But now that Cena is a heel, and provided Orton stays as a babyface, that is a completely fresh program now. We've never seen that before.
Well, and listen, Randy should beat Owens at WrestleMania. That makes all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. And Cena coming out as champion, like there is a match for, I think, you know, they will do, they have Backlash in St. Louis in May.
Perfect.
That lines up perfectly. Mm-hmm. Like I think great. Like that would make all the sense in the world to come out of Mania with, you know, you can detour Cody and go to Cena Orton in Orton's hometown. I think that would be, I would expect now, that at this point.
Let's say Cody retains, they could still do Orton going after Cody.
Yes, you could. I think that's a long-term one. I would hold that off for a big show. Because that was one they were teasing last year with, like, you know, Orton having the look at the title. And I think we always knew we would get there. They're kind of accelerating that now, calling it out. So, no, it was a good segment overall. And the crowd was, you know, reacting big to the stars. Do you see any of these reactions following Drew when they go back to the States? And given that it's, I don't know, it's like, are the audience going to lean towards Drew in this Damian Priest program? Like Damian Priest, it's like He's a good baby face, but I don't know if he is that one that, like, if the audience were to turn on, like, Drew just seems, he is just firing on all cylinders, and I think the audience is very much gravitating toward him.
Yeah, yeah. I don't see it for most cities. At a WrestleMania, though, I think it could be very possible because, I mean, still, to this day, I assume, like, WrestleMania crowds to be comprised of a lot of travelers, maybe a lot of them from London, even. So I could expect a similar vibe potentially for WrestleMania, but overall, I don't see them turning on anybody on that level.
It's WrestleMania month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and we are going to have wall-to-wall coverage of the events from Las Vegas beginning Thursday, April 17th. We're going to be doing daily shows on the Post Wrestling Cafe featuring myself, John Cena, and many more of the Post Wrestling staff. Plus, this month, it is two editions of Rewind Away as we cover SummerSlam 1997 and a retrospective of Jumbo Tsuruta. All that, plus coverage of New Japan's Sakura Genesis, Windy City Riot, Collision Course, and of course, Daredevil Born Again on MCU later. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door. So Lillian Garcia has been taken off of SmackDown. She's still going to be doing ring announcing on the Saturday night's main event specials, and in to replace her is Mark Chinook, who is going by the name Mark Nash. Do you know where Mark Nash hails from? You are not going to guess
Detroit,
this.
Detroit, Michigan.
Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario.
You're kidding.
I couldn't believe it when I looked up this guy's bio. He's from the Sioux. Yes.
Wow.
I was stunned.
Did you detect a bit of I guess North Ontario accent? Sault Ste. Marie accent?
For sure. No, this guy is, I mean, they mentioned like doing like top rank boxing on ESPN, but this guy is the in arena host for the Las Vegas Raiders in the NFL, for the Vegas Golden Knights. Just given that he's like this, you know, very attached to the sports teams in Vegas. I mean, TKO is a Vegas city. Nick Khan is from Vegas. It would not surprise me that it's, you know, someone that whoever kind of, you know, it just seems like a Vegas connection, and it's also the site of Mania, where this guy probably has like a decent like local following if you're a fan of these teams, and he's kind of the in arena host for, you know, your football and hockey teams.
And who's calling Raw right now? Is it Alicia Taylor?
Yes.
Who's doing Raw?
Yeah, so, it's Alicia Taylor.
So Mike Rome moves back to NXT?
Mike Rome's been on NXT.
Okay. So he's staying on. You're right.
It's just Lillian who's moving to do.
So what does that say about like Mike Rome? Like is he sort of like the Vic Joseph type of act where like we like you here, but we have no real ideas of actually promoting.
I assume he's based out of Florida and he roams at home. So that's good. That's where he is. Yes.
Okay.
Listen, I think they Raw and SmackDown are reserved. Like, it's just they go for people that have, you know, kind of that outside the industry experience. Here, and that's here, kind of a,
this has always been the case for the WWE, and it continues to be the case even with Vince McMahon not in the picture. If you want to work for this company, it's not necessarily getting experience.
Go to ESPN. That's broadcaster developmental.
Don't go
for
to
WWE.
Don't go to the indies. Like don't get your experience that way. Like call boxing at a high level or like hockey or something, you know, as long as you have that sort of like mainstream affiliation, that's your in.
The Street Profits against Pretty Deadly going for the tag titles in their home country, and they were out in the colors of the Union Jack, and Kit Wilson did a Les Kellett clothesline for some local flavor there. Ford lands from the heavens but bounces into a crucifix by Prince, who is actually the legal man, and they double team on Prince, press him up for a German. Wilson makes the save. They hit the spilt milk, which the crowd went nuts for. Ford gets saved, and then Wilson skins the cat, landing on the shoulders of Dawkins into a doomsday blockbuster. The Street Profits prevail with their new theme restored for another week. And, you know, Pretty Deadly just kind of played like serious challengers here. The crowd was, you know, into several of their key spots. It was a fine match.
From what little I saw, like without watching the commercial break, I thought this was like good. You know, they achieved one strong near fall reaction. The Pretty Deadly did, and it was more than what I was expecting. I will continue to maintain that I think since turning baby faces, they've definitely lost something. You know, like they
and they worked as the heels in this match too, which for the match dynamic, you kind of had to.
Pretty Deadly? No, I'm talking.
Oh, sorry. I was talking about the Prophets. Sorry.
I'm talking about Pretty Deadly. Like since, well, maybe you could say that about the Prophets too. But for Pretty Deadly, since turning baby faces, I feel like they've lost something. You know, they were at their most entertaining as a heel act, and for whatever reason, haven't been able to transition that sort of personality into their babyface act.
Well, they've dialed down the personality to make them kind of more of a serious team, but yeah, it takes away a lot of the appeal. It would be like doing similar with Chelsea Green, right? I don't think people want a serious wrestler Chelsea Green. I think the appeal of her is playing this character, and probably similar to Pretty Deadly, it's what set them apart. But you know, we're 3 weeks away. I think they've got to establish this. I mean, the tag program is there to just have Nick Aldis get his chart out with his Sharpie and explain that we're gonna hang these belts above the ring. I think that's probably where we're going. Earlier in the show, or earlier in the day, the Secret Hervis walked in on Zelina Vega, who was hanging out with Katana Chance and Caden Carter. And Zelina Vega reminds us, I might be small, but I'm a big threat to Chelsea Green. And a challenge is made for tonight on behalf of Chance and Carter against Piper Niven and Elba Fire. So we're back to Zelina Vega. She's small.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten about this.
That was sort of like the video. Remember that cool looking video with the motorcycle?
The motorcycle video.
Yeah. I know she's short. She's even short for the division, but like I never thought that that was like her identity, you know? I never thought that that was like the first thing I thought of when I thought about Zelina, like the sort of like little engine that could.
Don't give them a nickname. They'll love that one. The little motorcycle that could. Then we get the announcement that the WWE Hall of Fame is now inducting matches into the Hall of Fame, which will be called Immortal Moments. And the first induction will be at this year's ceremony.
So that entails not just matches, but moments.
Immortal moment, I guess it gives you that leeway that it doesn't have to be a match. It could also be, you know, like pick your moment, like Austin and Tyson doing their big pull apart, like whatever. Yeah, you could put moments in there too.
Milk truck. Can we fit a Hall of Fame ring onto a milk truck?
Listen, my first thought for this was, listen, we're running out of headliners. How can we get more past headliners to come to the ceremony? And that's what they're doing. They're bringing Steve Austin and Bret Hart to induct the WrestleMania 13 match, which, if you want to feel old, this was 28 years ago that they had this match. But listen, if you're going to put a WrestleMania match in first, this is probably the best one to pick right off the bat. It would at least be on people's shortlist for the best matches in WrestleMania history.
Yeah. So this is very similar to what the UFC does for their Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
Inducting a match, right? Why not? You know, it's a perfectly cool idea. Like, in the end,
think of all the people that they can just put back in now for future years. If like this gets Austin and Brett on your show, like
the WWE Hall of Fame, first and foremost, is a show. So why would you just limit it to people that can only go in one time when you can induct anything or anyone you want in this particular show?
Slayer might go in another four times.
He can go for all 17 championship wins if you consider all of those immortal moments. Yeah, yeah.
Well, then he's going in for more than 20 times once we get the real list. Yeah,
he's gonna have rings for his toes, toe rings for Ric Flair. Yeah, they will never run out of like you know moments for these.
Yeah, maybe Steve Austin will go in solo for the big feud that turned the company around in 98-99. Austin versus Shane McMahon, the feud that transcended wrestling. Yeah. Paul Heyman arrives with Roman Reigns, and we got the contract signees all arriving, flanked by security to keep them apart until the final segment. Caden Carter and Katana Chance facing Piper Niven and Elba Fire. Joe Tessitore mentions this is Chance and Carter's first televised match since December. And then I looked
on NXT. Yeah.
And then I looked this up. This was their third match of the year. And They had a match in January, a match in February. Katana has done a speed match. So I don't think there were any injuries to deal with. This is just a reality of no house shows. And if you're not into plans, you're out of sight, out of mind, and you're pretty much not wrestling. And that's just the reality. It's not just we focus a lot on AEW and these talents that are either disappear or you just don't see too much. There's examples too in WWE, like what's Andrade up to? And it's, yeah, mm-hmm. like that's just your situation that you have here. But I've always liked Chance and Carter as a team, but even at 3 hours, like it's not like there's a whole lot of room for, if there aren't plans for people, there's not a whole lot to do.
Yeah. I would say like, even if you're a male mid Carter, it's kind of tough to find time. If you're a female mid Carter, like that is very, very difficult on the show. Especially, and if you're a tag team female mid Carter, like forget it, you know, the division like barely exists. So, I don't know what these two could, I like them in ring. And in fact, I think they're one of my favorite tag teams.
I really like these two. I think they, if they got serious with them, like, I think it's a real, like, engage, like, it's a great, they have a great style. It's very fan friendly. It gets your audience into, like, they do a lot of cool stuff, especially given Katana's gymnastics background. I mean, it's, it's a numbers game and they're on the bad side of it.
And it's the division, you know, the lack of like opponents for a tag team. It's also like, are their characters inspiring enough for the writers to give them something to do? And they need
to go to another rave. It's time to send the cameras for another rave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we see Fire sends Carter over the corner. She crashes to the floor and then Niven hits a cannonball off the apron. We come back from break and they hit the keg stand onto Niven. Fire breaks it up. And then as Carter goes to the floor with a high cross, Green distracts on the apron and Carter turns into the Piper Driver and is pinned. So Piper, Niven, Elba Fire get the win. Zelina Vega ran out. At least I got my magnifying glass out to identify her. And she hits a tilt-a-whirl DDT onto Niven. Nails Fire, but then Green hits her from behind, hits the Unprettier, and they stand tall after she attempted a code red and was nailed with a super kick and Niven laid her out with the senton. So it appears that Vega will be continuing to try to run through these three and...
Yeah.
I guess get her title match with Chelsea Green at some point. But that really feels like a night before WrestleMania type of match if we get there with Chelsea and Zelina Vega.
Yeah, I would suggest so. I think Zelina's biggest strength is her ability to cut like a big fiery promo. And I would hope that we get to see a lot more of that. And I hope the promos are more than just like, I'm bigger than I seem, you know, like whatever. Like I hope it's a bit more than that, especially against Chelsea Green, that these audiences are going to cheer loudly for as a babyface because she is so entertaining. If you don't have a big enough personality that is likable, people just aren't going to care that much about you. And because I don't really see people booing Chelsea Green.
There in the crowd was Grammy-nominated singer Louis Capaldi and UFC fighter Oban Elliott, who are shown. LA Knight Braun Strowman for the U.S. title. This is Braun Strowman's key to getting to WrestleMania, so the stakes were high on this one. Knight manages a bulldog and then runs Braun into the corner, lifts him up for a suplex to get the crowd going. Braun stops a BFT, clotheslining Knight to the floor, and as he goes for the Strowman Express, out of nowhere pops in Jacob Fatu with this flying knee. The bell is called, match is thrown out, and then Jacob Fatu goes on a rampage. He attacks both men. Samoan drops Braun on the desk. The crowd is going nuts for Jacob. They're singing for him. Knight stops a hip attack, so he's hit with a pop-up Samoan. Then Jacob proceeds to hit three consecutive hip attacks and a pair of springboard moonsaults. They couldn't have booked this guy as a better babyface. Jacob Fatu looked awesome in this segment. The crowd went nuts for him. And as we've mentioned, like, this is a tried and true method that they have utilized quite a bit with Bronson Reed, and they've done it several times now with Jacob Fatu. I think they don't mind this reaction at all. I think this guy has that babyface run down.
They're already hinting
at it. So
yeah, he's already a babyface. I would say, you know, he's feuding against, or he's teasing tension very strongly against Solo Sikoa. So they're doing a great job with him, you know, if that's the intent. And it makes me wonder what the match might be at WrestleMania. He's wanting to, well, I guess.
Well, let's talk about the segment after. Sure. We go backstage and Fatu runs into Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga, and Sikoa is upset at him kind of going rogue and going out there by himself. And Fatu snaps back. He's not going to be told what to do and is told to lower his tone. And he says, when it comes to Braun, I will be the last man standing and I'm bringing the U.S. title home, and I'll either do it with you guys or without you. Now, I don't think he realizes Braun Strowman is not the United States champion. So my thought is we're definitely getting a last man standing match involving Braun, but the U.S. title also seems to be involved here. So I don't know how you would do a triple threat last man standing match. That would be a lot of men not standing by the end of a match. We've never seen that before, have we?
No, we haven't. A triple threat last man standing. So
I definitely do not want to see that experiment.
Well, people would have to be taken
that would
out,
truly be
possible.
Like, three men standing, that, one will be left standing.
Even in a video game mode, that would feel incredibly frustrating to play. You know, like it feels like you'd be playing whack-a-mole, and it would just be awful. In this little promo, like Jacob kind of set up for himself like three different matches. Like
he's got a lot going on here.
He wants a last man standing match with Braun Strowman. He wants the United States title from LA Knight, and he's cutting a promo against Solo Sikoa. So like I don't know what the direction is. It could be a three way, could be a four way, could be three different singles matches. I expect some involving WrestleMania, though, with Jacob Fatu and at least one, if not all, of these men, though.
Jackie Redmond spoke with Jimmy Uso and asked him about the slap heard round the world. Everyone's been talking about this slap since Monday.
Well, more people were talking about it than a typical Jimmy Uso segment. We could at least say that.
I guess so. He states that doubt has been creeping in for Jay, but he's going to bust Gunther's ass on Monday. Jay's going to do it at WrestleMania. And then Jimmy goes walking and he runs into Miz and Carmelo Hayes, and they call him the other Uso and states, you and your brother are career sidekicks. Neither of you are going to beat Gunther, and you guys will never carry this industry. And Miz warns him what would happen to you if you ever slap me. And then Jimmy winds up, Miz flinches, and Jimmy's going to go get a match from Nick Aldis with The Miz. And he knows how Nick Aldis rolls on the show. So this was going to be of no problem. And then we go to this video package with Naomi. And this was shot really well. She's in her caution tape. And she states that she is a woman who always did the right thing and justifies her attack on Jade. Why am I considered the bad one in this situation? And tears are flowing as she asks, how did Jade come in and take my place? Who was it, Bianca, that inspired you? And we get all these different shots of Bianca and Naomi, and says, I always had your back, Bianca, not Jade. And I'm done being the third wheel and being too nice, undervalued, and underappreciated. And moving forward, if Jade continues to get in my way, I strongly advise you to proceed with caution. This promo was great. I thought this was really, really well done. And this was shot really well, too.
This and the main event segment were my two favorite things coming out of the show. I was very skeptical about a Naomi heel turn. She just is so likable that it was very hard for me to see a dislikable version of her. I never thought we would get something as, like, I think, well-developed from, like, the jump as this seems to be. I didn't think she had this level of, like, acting ability in her. And you see this, I personally think, like, they could take her to the top. I know she's already been champion, but, like, I think she could be the top heel in this company. Like, that's the type of excitement I have coming off of something like this that I thought was so well produced and well delivered. The proceed with caution while wearing the caution tape outfit, a little corny to me.
Oh,
like,
come on.
Even if it's an Owen tribute, like that was where it became a little too, like, cartoonish for me. But I thought everything else was just, like, so
these are
so
the promos Owen needed to be cutting when he was in the Nation.
Yeah, he could have. I wonder if she is going to be a case where, like, if this sort of work continues, I do wonder if she will get cheered over her opponent. Because I think Jade, there is, to me, a certain level of danger that she will be seen by the fans as somebody who is more flash than substance, you know?
And, caution and, versus danger. I like it.
Oh, that's right. So I wonder. I just wonder. But I thought she was great.
All this is with Jade, and she wants Naomi, but she's not here tonight. And she warns Nick, when I see her, it's on site. And she walks into B-Fab and Meechan, who call it trash what Naomi did to her, and that Naomi deserves everything coming to them. So we got a 30-second establishment of a friendship to make sense of a run-in in about 2 minutes. B-Fab and Meechan come out. Meechan is set for a match with Charlotte Flair, but they are jumped by Naomi, who... Wade Barrett explains this is a proxy attack on Jade's good friends. And we see B-Fab destroyed, sent into the barricade and desk, and Jade runs down. Naomi runs off, and Jade helps her friend B-Fab to the back, just leaving Meechan here for the Wolves as Charlotte comes out for the match, and she crosses by Jade. A callback prior to Jade's first match when she was still the free agent, and they did that little tease with the two of them backstage. So we had a look here between Charlotte and Jade just briefly, and then Charlotte proceeded to come down, and Meechan was going to give it a go and have her match. And after Flair stopped Eat Defeat, it went multiple times that Meechan was trying to hit this, and we get fuck you Charlotte chants that they tried to censor again here. They leveled off though. Flair blocked more Eat Defeats, and then finally she was able to hit one. Flair gets her foot on the rope, and then Meechan misses, kicking the steps, and Flair chop blocks her, attacks the knee, and hits a figure eight, or applies the figure eight for the submission.
Decent match. You know, I thought it worked because the crowd seemed to hate Charlotte so much. It's the type of heat that it feels very genuine, because I just think people might be kind of sick of her, but I think it works, you know. It'll certainly benefit Tiffany Stratton. So interesting to see the Charlotte-Jade interaction, you know. I could see them being each other's post-WrestleMania programs, meaning I could see both of them winning at WrestleMania.
Jackie interviewed Tiffany Stratton and says that Flair came at her last week. She calls Charlotte insecure for not letting her get a word out last week.
So clearly this was like a big enough discussion point from the audience
that they
coming
had to address
that segment. Yeah.
I mean, it did not come off well. And she goes over all the insults that Flair levied at her last week, stating, what does that make you look like when you lose to me, that you've lost to this person that you've just run down with all these insults, which is kind of promo 101, and that Flair's ego will stay in Vegas. Because what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Oh, okay.
Boy, can we just get to the match?
Yeah, it was a promo, but not at all what I would consider a good one. You know, Stratton, I think, does like feel a little like little exposed being in this sort of position where she still feels like she's very much learning on the job. She at best, I think, is coming across as a generic like babyface voice, but void of like some, I think, much needed unique appeal for somebody in this championship position. So I hope she finds it in these few weeks.
Well, we will be back on Eastern Standard Tiffy time next week. Maybe that's what they're waiting. They're just off. They're, you know, the clocks are about to be changed over in Europe as well. So.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre. Crowd singing for Drew, and then... you know, Drew's making fun of Randy's back. Drew gets thrown shoulder first into the post, and then they go to the floor, clear the desk. Orton reverses, dropping Drew on top of the desk. And it's Drew coming back with chops, and Randy goes into his sequence, clotheslines, power slam, draping DDT. But when he calls for the RKO, he spots Kevin Owens walking down the aisle. And just like that, Randy Orton turns around into the Claymore, and Drew wins. Man, this was a Randy Orton looking like quite the fool here as he got caught by the distraction finish and a rare clean loss for, well, semi-clean loss.
Yeah, for Orton, especially on television, you know. But I mean, I thought it worked perfectly fine here to put the focus on the Owens feud. And I'm sure at some point Orton and Drew will pick this program back up and Orton will probably get the win back in similar fashion.
Well, Owens attacks Orton and teases the pile driver on the desk, but Orton avoids, yanks out Owens' leg, and then teases the punt on the floor, but Owens runs for the hills here over the barricade and out. They're really building up the punt. Like that is going to be one of the big pops of WrestleMania weekend, is a man getting a concussion. So there you go. That is one program that I think this is one of the non-main event programs that has work pretty well in terms of the lead up, and they're doing an effective job each week.
I think they should turn into a triple threat person.
I do too. I think there's too few people in this match. Too little focus to have. Tag team last man standing match.
Triple punt match.
Then we had our latest vignettes. So we had this masked figure doing all of Rey Fénix spots in Rey Fénix's mask, and then he was identified as Rey Fénix, and he is coming next Friday. So they are going to debut him in Chicago next week, which is probably going to be a very hot crowd next Friday.
Yeah. So I guess notable that he gets to keep his name, despite there already being a Rey. How are we ever going to tell these two apart? I don't know. I guess interesting that like they're debuting him before WrestleMania.
I wonder if they're going to just shoehorn him into something quick.
Yeah.
You know, what'd be great is that if his music plays, he comes out and it's Chad Gable in a mask, and then Ray comes out.
Would he be billed from the Gulf of America?
But perhaps so. Maybe. There was also the latest, we will assume, Aleister Black promo with a silhouette more and more leading people towards that. There was also the XXV, which is the Roman numerals for 25. So it does feel like this would be a post. Well, April 25th looks to be the arrival date for Aleister Black.
So, you're assuming Aleister Black?
Yes.
Yeah.
It could be
anybody.
Yeah. Maybe this will be Miro.
Maybe it could be Miro.
Mark
Miro. Yeah.
You're right. Well, he's got a book to push that he just released. So maybe you're right.
Could be anybody.
Johnny B. Bad. Next week, B-Fab against Naomi and Rey Fénix on the show. So they are very comfortable with the advance of that show. Jimmy Uso against The Miz in a match you could close your eyes and envision. What would a Jimmy Uso Miz match consist of? This was it. Ripcord clothesline by Miz. He calls for the skull crushing finale, but Jimmy counters. And then after a reversal, hits a DDT onto Jimmy, hits him with the It Kicks, but Jimmy comes back. Springboard gets stopped with a super kick, and Jimmy wins with the Uso splash as he gets ready for his slaughter on Monday at the hands of Gunther. And he cut a promo. Gunther, I'm coming for you. On Raw. So that's going to be something on Monday. I hope we get a heavy heat angle. Like he should murder Jimmy.
I hope we get blood.
We should. Like this should be the reason Jimmy doesn't have a match at Mania, is because he is massacred. This needs to be like Apollo Creed getting destroyed by Drago, and Jay is going for revenge at Mania.
Yes,
that's
exactly
the story.
Yeah. I hope we get a line of blood.
If he dies, he dies. All right. I am Gunther. Drew meets with his buddy Lewis Capaldi, just gives him a hug, and he's off to the pub to celebrate his win. And he tells Jackie he called out Damian Priest. The guy didn't even show up. And he opens the door. You knew he was too happy for this night to end on a high. And there is Timu Undertaker himself, who's been standing outside for God knows how long. He knew where Drew was going to exit. He had this all mapped out. This was some incredible intel that Drew McIntyre, or that Damian Priest had. So they brawl over this car. They throw the driver through a table, and this ends with a South of Heaven to Drew on the windshield. And Damian yells to the security as they're, poor Petey here, saying to stop. Don't worry, I'm done. Rest in peace, jackass. Which was a nice like follow-up to the Undertaker reference earlier. And CM Punk just walks by as Drew is being gathering glass out of his head.
Yeah, that bump on the windshield, I don't care if it was worked or not, that looked crazy. And a lot more than what I was expecting for a guy who had already wrestled the match. So very well done, I thought.
Maybe they'll have a race at WrestleMania instead. They'll get in their respective cars and just race on the Vegas Strip.
Yeah.
Nick Aldis is hosting the contract signing. Roman Reigns, dude, this was like 30 minutes of the show. And if you got through the entrances and stuff, this was like a 6-minute segment. Roman and Heyman come out. They sing and sing. Even Heyman gets in on the singing here. And Reigns goes to talk when Seth comes out.
By the way, he's given up on the YTC shirt. It's back.
Oh, was this an OTC shirt?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it had a good run. Rollins explains that we once entered this arena on a helicopter to take out the Old Guard and the Undertaker. We accomplished our mission. Reigns says, there is no we. We are dead. He says, I did all the work. I made this place better. I made it a $1 billion business. I am the reason 99.9% that this place is better. Rollins says, it's that mindset, which is why I still need to screw with you. And you let that snake back in. And now I've got to clean up the mess. So he signs the contract. CM Punk is out last and said, I came here to chew bubblegum and sign a contract. And I'm all out of bubblegum. And he goes to look through the contract, and Reigns directs him to page 4, clause 5, which should be someone's finisher. And he says, he has Heyman inform him, I know what you're looking for. It's in there. And Heyman informs Punk that you are closing the show at WrestleMania. You are a WrestleMania main eventer. And Punk is near tears, not because of this goal that has been accomplished, but why in God's name did I put so much effort into the Royal Rumble and the Elimination Chamber this year when this was such an easier path to headline WrestleMania? And Rollins is furious. He's so mad he's headlining WrestleMania because that means Punk is going to get his dream. And he says that headlining WrestleMania is sacred. It means more to me than anything, except for the fact that Punk has never done it, and blames them for giving it to Punk. Punk thanks everyone. Reigns says, you should thank me for making this happen. So Punk gets down on one knee, sarcastically thanks Reigns and signs the contract, but then ends it by stating, but that's not the favor that I'm owed, as the show ends. I've got to say, I think they've gotten a lot of mileage out of this favor. And I think it's like, I just think it's this great device that they have, that people are constantly, like, everyone brings up, like, what this payoff will be, what this favor is. I'm sure the payoff is going to be great. And I think it's that kind of mystery that keeps you guessing about what that big plot twist is going to be. But there you have it. They're headlining, presumably night one, we would assume. They did not state that outright.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like the closing segment here. I thought there was a strong range of performances in all of this, you know, and I felt Punk in particular was excellent, you know, like this and Naomi. If you give me tears, that's a level of acting I just don't expect from a professional wrestler. So I loved the way he just looked up at Paul Heyman after Heyman confirmed that main event. It felt very cathartic, I think, if you're somebody who's followed CM Punk's career, because it felt like his decades-long chase had finally, or at least is about to reach its conclusion. And I thought Punk conveyed that really well, just with the way he looked. Roman, I thought, was very entertaining, doing his sort of like Goodfellas type of shtick here as the head of the table, wisecracking. Seth had a very important role here. I thought he overdid it just a bit, you know, with the temper tantrum again. Like, that might have been the yellow caution tape for me in this particular segment, but it wasn't enough to ruin it. Like, again, expectations are pretty low for wrestling level acting, but I think he might have like benefited from dialing it back a little. But overall, would this have been better as like one-on-one feud between some of these participants, not all of the participants, perhaps? But I actually am really enjoying the story that they're telling between the three and the character dynamics that are taking place between each of them individually. So There's still a bit of mystery at the end, and now we don't know at all what this favor could be, because I think we all assumed it was this. What else could it be?
I really like the idea of Rollins potentially winning this match, because I think he's the one that people are not expecting to win this match. And I think the idea that, you know, to me, it's Punk should always be chasing this elusive, this WrestleMania dream of his that he has. Like, that's his drive of his character, that he gets this spot, but I think they need to make it. It's like the worst night of his career. Like, he finally loses to Seth, or he gets fucked somehow, that you made it there, but it was the worst night of your career. And it gives him a whole next year's story to go right the wrong next year. Because I think if you're doing this, putting Punk in this main event, like, you're giving away a certain chase to Punk, but you can create a new one as well by making this, you know, this humiliating loss, or it's some kind of, you know, like, Heyman screws them in some way. I think there's a lot you can play with, and I'm sure that they're going to have this one mapped out really effectively, that Punk doesn't need to win this, but he will be the main character coming out of it.
Yeah. Next year, it won't just be wanting to main event WrestleMania being his dream. It'll be winning at WrestleMania, in closing WrestleMania. Night two, that might be his dream.
Yeah, he's going to have the awakening, the Chris Melle, you know, arguments aside, he knows night two is the real main event.
Yeah. It kind of, I mean, they've done similar with Naito, where, like, Naito's dream isn't just to win at Wrestle Kingdom. It's to do the LIJ fist bump after winning. His ultimate dream.
That's it. He needs to do the fist bump in New Orleans next year.
I think Rollins' aim from this point until WrestleMania should be to try to injure Punk at every opportunity. You know, that being sort of like his last ditch effort to try to get Punk out of this main event. So I'm looking forward to it. I would love for them to show me reactions from Jey Uso at this particular news. Like, wouldn't you be rightfully pissed off if you're Jey?
It's my gripe with the segment was just the fact that, like, we're left to believe what? That, like, Heyman has the power to invoke this? I guess you can assume, like, Roman Reigns is that character that does have that power. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, the last 2 months we have had, like, these pay-per-views that are all built around, you want to win the big match to headline WrestleMania. And it felt like this was sort of like, this is not the wrong choice to be your show closer. I was just looking for maybe something a bit more, explain it a bit better of where we get there. Because are we to say that, like, your Royal Rumble winner, if it wasn't Roman Reigns, they were never going to headline Mania, because Reigns has that power. He can just headline WrestleMania regardless. Like, why is he even in the match if that's such the case?
Well, I think they have to be a lot more careful with their wording for these WrestleMania and Elimination Chamber matches, where I don't know if they specifically use the you know, verbiage of, you know, the winner gets the main event WrestleMania, or if they simply get a title shot. Because you have four winners coming out of those particular matches, and
no one of them, though. It's just they get into the hype of it all, and that's
really, in the end, only one of those winners will end up main eventing.
Mm-hmm. I'm very curious as well for next week. They're in Chicago, so obviously, like, Punk should be all over that show, and it makes you wonder, like, this announcement of headlining Mania, like, think of what that reaction would have been in Chicago. So it's like, next week should be a big promo set. It should be something, obviously, with the Punk as the central figure next week as well. So that was SmackDown. That had a lot of progression for WrestleMania. I would state that you're getting a lot of kind of the middle programs that are somewhat being shopped together, and it feels like there does have the feel of kind of a just, we're going to throw a lot of people into various combinations to make out the rest of this card, but your money matches are your money matches, and they're all in fairly decent shape with Cody Cena, with this three-way, with Owens and Orton. Those are your big matches for the show, and there you have it.
Yeah. I mean, I thought this was certainly one of the higher star power driven editions of SmackDown, with a Roman Reigns and a CM Punk and a Seth Rollins on the show. You had Orton and Drew McIntyre and Cody Rhodes in the first segment. So all of that I thought was very strong. I really love the Naomi segment. I think that is well worth watching, you know, go. So really enjoying that.
Drew was really great on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. So I enjoyed the SmackDown overall.
All right. Well, we're going to say goodbye on the YouTube channel, but before you leave, make sure you like and subscribe, because if not, you will get a virus on your computer. So make sure you take care of that immediately, because we will send you God knows what script onto your home device.
Yes. Yeah, you should do that.
Okay. We'll talk to you on Monday, but hey, for all of you on the cafe, sit back. We're going to calls and feedback. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.